Blog Talk Radio.
Tornadoes,
Johnny Pimentel. And we have another Rock Sock'em episode of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show coming your way here. We have, hopefully, Bruce Buffer, the voice of the Octagon, coming on with us tonight for the UFC. And primarily he's going to be helping kind of market his new figurines there for round five, where he's in them. Between two fighters, they have a three series, I think they call them, and Bruce is right in the middle. So they got some nice little groupings there. But anyway, he's going to be on. Hopefully, we don't know for sure because we didn't connect with him before the show. But I left him a message, so hopefully he's going to be on later. And if not, we have plenty to cover. And right now, actually. Probably the biggest news on my radar is has to do with all the legal stuff that I'm going through. That has really nothing to do with Fight News Unlimited, but it's pretty interesting. I have a website called ScarletLawyer.com that's involved. JudgeGod.com is involved, and I've finally been sanctioned for the first time for violating an injunction, even though I'm not even party to the case. So it's going to get interesting. There's going to be a lot of litigation. I'm going to actually probably not have much time to work on the site, so I apologize if people are noticing that the site is pretty bare lately and doesn't get updated until like 3 o'clock at night in the morning. But I'm still going to keep plugging away. It's just that I'm going to be a little distracted over the next few months, but it's all going to pay off. It's definitely one of those situations where you know, they got in over their heads, and they think they're going to underestimate me. But the very first hearing on my latest case related to ScarletLawyer.com Inspiration 1, I had a first hearing last Thursday in open court, and I think I impressed the judge. I totally blew the other guy out of the water. He had asked for all these things coming in, and all he got was for me to have to take one little email off the website and to remove his email address. So all in all, it was a pretty good day for me in court. I got my points across. One of the bailiffs had to grab my arm and stop me from yelling so loud at one point because I was so pissed. And you know, it's one of those cases where there is some cyberbullying aspects to it. And I was comforted last night because I went and I looked at the other lawyer's Twitter page, and his latest post is, "I hate it when clients throw me under the bus." So he obviously knows he's losing already, and it's not going to be good for him. But anyway, getting back to the subject at hand of fight news, we had a lot of good fights over the weekend. I also was able to, well, we've got 2 weeks to cover now, so we got to talk about Chael Sonnen almost beating Anderson Silva there at the UFC. We had actually some fights last night on ESPN. I don't know if you caught those, but I was able to watch that. And Arislandi Lara had a really good performance, knocked this guy out in his first round. The fight before that, I forget who the guys were, but that was pretty interesting. It went all 10 rounds. Guy from Cuba actually won that fight. But the big news is Chad Dawson, one of my favorites, was unseated over this past last weekend.
Yes, he was. Going back, I just want to, you know, cover a couple of few things here. You know, last week, obviously, we didn't have a show. I remember you told me that day, you sent me an email. I think sent me an email the night before saying, you know, if it was possible for me to run the show by myself, which unfortunately, I don't have a digital recorder, I don't have a speakerphone, and with my schedule, like literally, on like a lot of times on Thursday night, but tonight I didn't get home until about almost an hour ago. So I think I had enough time to get home, eat, you know, relax a little bit, take my bag outside, the next thing you know, I'm just being busy. It's the summertime. So, like I said, last week there was no way I could have done it myself, and my brain fried anyway. Well, let's cover what happened last weekend. Chad Dawson, I didn't get to see much of the fight. I got to see almost like the very end. When you know, he was coming back, he had Pascal hurt. And when they clashed heads, Dawson says he thinks it was intentional because he was about to take Pascal out. Whether that was the case or not, the fact of the matter is it went to the decision. Pascal was legitimately ahead, and he won won the unified titles. Would have Dawson taken him out? Well, that's the point of argument. I mean, Dawson did have him hurt. He does have a mandatory rematch clause, but Pascal was looking at a few other things. So the first thing he did was he called out Lucien Guité, who's also a Montreal-based fighter, very popular out of that area, 168 pounds. And Guité kind of hemmed and hawed from the report that I read. And if people are saying Pascal might be a little too big, which doesn't really make a whole lot of sense because Pascal's only loss was to Carl Froch at 168 pounds. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but okay, we'll let Butte go with that if that's what they want to say, if he wants to stay at 168. Okay, so now the other name I heard mentioned was, you know who, Rich?
Who?
Bernard Hopkins.
Ooh.
See, Hopkins and Dawson are different kind of fighters. Obviously,
what I
can't
Hopkins. Get, though, is what has Bernard Hopkins done? I mean, he's been put up in all these, you know, pound for pound lists, but I mean, I don't even think there's been any announcement of like whether he's still training.
Well, knowing Hopkins stays trained every day. When Hopkins gave in his retirement a couple of years ago after beating Antonio Tarver, Nazim Richardson came out on an interview and said Hopkins called him up on Tuesday, said, "Hey, I'm sorry I missed the gym yesterday, but I'll be back tomorrow." And Nazim was like, "You're retired. You can take as many days off as you want." And Hopkins is back on Tuesday training again. That's basically what the guy does. He lives in the gym. So that type of situation, you're going to see a guy like Bernard Hopkins. Don't count on him being retired too long. Don't count on him getting out of shape. I think that he's an interesting fight with him because you got to think, a guy like Chad Dawson is uniquely skilled. He's a southpaw. But Dawson is a different kind of fighter. He's not a guy that's going to, you know, go for the knockout, go to take you out. He's not a cerebral type fighter. He's a young and supremely talented fighter, but I don't think he knows 100% how to fight yet. So he made some mistakes in that fight. Hopkins obviously does not have the skills that he had, you know, 5, 10, 15 years ago. But he's still Bernard Hopkins. The guy who knows the sport of boxing inside and out. he would see the things that Dawson had success with. He would, Dawson obviously does not have as good a defense. He's been knocked out a few times. And that's something Hopkins could exploit. I am not saying Hopkins would come out and win, but I would lean towards him. I just honestly would, just because I've seen the guy for so many years.
Right.
Going back to the previous weekend that I want to cover, because we haven't had a chance, a couple fights with a guy that Chad Dawson and Bernard Hopkins have both beaten, Glenn Johnson. Glenn Johnson had a very good fight with Tavares Cloud, and I don't have to get to see that, Rich. The fight was entertaining, and the post-fight interview was more entertaining.
You just, like, read my mind, because I was just wondering, what fight was Glenn Johnson just did? Because, you know, obviously I have the experience with Reggie Johnson supposed to be fighting Glenn Johnson, and that never happened. But, you know, I remember specifically that Glenn had a fight coming up, and I was wondering in the back of my head how it went.
Well, Glenn fought Tavares Crowell, and they said even before the fight started, the announcer said this could be a fight of the year candidate just because of their styles.
Right.
The one criticism Glenn had coming into the fight was after the weigh-in, he hydrated almost 20 pounds. He went from like 173 to 192 or 174 to 192. It was like 18 or so pounds at least. And he looked just a little bit soft. But there were times like, you know, Cloud would have pressure on him and he'd be winning, but then Johnson would pick up around the punch. He'd have Cloud hurt. Both guys were legitimately hurt a couple times in this fight. And going into the 10th round, I mean, it was all but even. Cloud, I think, won the 11th round, and I thought Cloud barely edged the 12th. My dad gave the 12th to Johnson. My dad thought it was a draw. But when the announcers came out, they all had it 115, 112 Cloud, and which is 8 rounds before, which I thought was a little absurd. And they're interviewing Cloud, and Johnson walks right up to him. And Johnson, like, well, they're interviewing Cloud, like, I won this fight. You make it happen. He's like, I won this fight. I had him hurt. He never had me hurt. He hits hard, but I was never hurt. I won the fight. I learned the better punches. Cloud started getting pissed off. And Max Kellerman's doing the interview, and he's like trying to play peacemaker in the middle of the ring, which is actually kind of entertaining. Definitely a good fight. Tavares Cloud has a lot of natural talent. He's not as athletically talented as Chad Dawson is. He's a harder puncher. He's more aggressive fighter. But he's the type of guy, he's too easy to hit. And when he gets against a guy that is not as easy to hit as Glenn Johnson and not as willing to stand in front of him, he's going to have some trouble. He's going to have some trouble with, you know, guys like maybe like a Bernard Hopkins or, you know, maybe even a Chad Dawson, guys that are very skilled defensively. And then the main event that night was Devin Alexander fighting Alexander Cullen. Kalantnik? Sorry. No. And not the most entertaining fight in the world. I mean, Alexander won. Took some punches in there. I mean, Kalantnik, a very skilled fighter. But it wasn't the great performance that Alexander was looking for. And now they're trying to get him to play with Timothy Bradley. They're talking about a 50-50 split. And Bradley said to do 50-50 anywhere but St. Louis, which is Alexander's hometown. I'd love to see it. I could probably be edge out.
Yeah, could be still a good fight, but yeah, I think Bradley is one of those real unsung heroes. I mean, people are starting to notice him, but he's been around for a while and he's fought some real good fights, so I'm looking forward to seeing what he does when he steps up. Do we lose you, Tony? Still there?
No, I'm right here.
Your moments of silence are troubling.
That's okay. I mean, like you said, I'll rant for a few minutes and I'll let you talk.
All right. Well, seeing as you're giving me the opportunity here, we had 117, UFC 117 on August 7th that we didn't get to talk about. That was, main event was Chael Sonnen versus Anderson. right. We're back.
Are we in?
We're back. After only like a 2 minute delay. So, as I was saying, Anderson Silva versus Chael Sonnen was the main event there at UFC 117. And as I heard from Matt Lindland, a lot of people probably weren't expecting, Chael Sonnen was dominating that fight through the round that he lost it in, unfortunately. But, geez, when I was thinking of, when I tuned into it, it was actually like at the end of the fourth round. I actually was sleeping while it all happened, and I woke up and I said, oh, geez, it's on, so I checked it. And then I ended up watching the whole thing on the replay, but... while I was watching that fight in the fourth round, I thought to myself, geez, I should have bet on Chael Sonnen because of what Matt Lindman told me, and I had inside information. And comes into the fifth round, and Anderson locks him up in his triangle choke, and that's all she wrote for Chael Sonnen. And, you know, I was glad I didn't bet yet again. And another one of our inside information type of people that we had some knowledge of and background on. I also was thinking I should have bet on him until he lost his fight, and that's Stefan Struve versus Christian Moorcraft in round two. Moorcraft got KO'd by just some vicious striking, but he was doing good in the first round. He tooled up on Stefan pretty good and had his lip busted up really bad and just totally tore into him, and the doctor was going to stop the fight at one point. Because of the injuries, but Stefan, you know, basically went out there and took 22 seconds in the second round to do his business. And he's the guy that, in his very first fight, I think it was over in Germany, he had his head split open so bad that blood was everywhere, and he still won that fight. So he's definitely a comebacker. But also on that card, we had John Fitch versus Thiago Alves. Fitch won in by third round decision. Decision the whole fight. Clay Guida won by round three submission over Rafael Dos Anjos. Matt Hughes won by round one submission against Ricardo Almeida. And Roy Nelson actually lost his first fight in the UFC. It was kind of pitiful to watch. I mean, Roy had a lot of heart, a lot of guts, and literally and figuratively. But he just couldn't pull it out. He couldn't reach Dos Santos, and Dos Santos was throwing body shots, head shots. It ended up being a very nice boxing match, Tony. You would have loved watching this fight. And Roy just kept on coming, and he was like a grizzly bear. He just kept throwing those big-ass looping right hands and connecting every now and then and putting Dos Santos on the defensive. And Dos Santos is a real chiseled guy. So it was a very interesting dynamic, you know, seeing these two guys go at it and then to go all three rounds. And Dos Santos got the unanimous decision win. And Roy probably needs to get some conditioning if he's going to compete there at that level with these guys. But definitely showed a lot of heart. Definitely made a lot of new fans, I bet. And then in some other fights, we had Dustin Hazlett lost to Rip Story by second round KO. Rodney Wallace lost to Phil Davis by decision, unanimous decision. Johnny Hendricks beat Charlie Brenneman by second-round TKO. And then Todd Brown lost to Tim Boach by round three decision. We already talked about Moorcraft. Ben Saunders lost to Dennis Hallman by round three decision. All right, so that's UFC 117. Of course, we have UFC 118 coming up in Boston. Don't know if I'm going to be able to be there because I got so much other crap to do, and I don't have a ticket. I don't have any way to get in. And I doubt I'm going to get comped anytime soon. Even if we do get Bruce on the phone tonight, I doubt we're going to get very far trying to get backstage passes. But anyway.
I thought you were Mr. Popular in the UFC circle.
Yeah, maybe in the circles of the people that are against the UFC. Actually, I have been looking into the there's another lawsuit, a big lawsuit that the UFC filed against somebody that is a competing boxing organization called Bellator. And there's a gentleman named Ken Tavia involved. And he's actually hooked us up with some of our previous interviews with MMA guys, like, geez, who was the last one I can remember? It was probably, I can't think of the guy's name off the top of my head, but it was a pretty big name. And basically what this guy does, he's an agent. You know, he goes around and he hooks up all these fighters with their contracts in different leagues, and he deals a lot with the UFC. So they sued him because he gave the Bellator people some fighter contracts that belong to the UFC. And it's work product, technically, so it is, you know, their property. But, you know, he doesn't have a non-compete agreement, so it's kind of an interesting case, and I'm kind of following it, trying to see what's going on with that. So I might even, you know, jump into the waters and see what I can do to expose that case, too, because it's kind of a, lot of shadiness going on there, where I think they're just trying to pick on the guy, and they're making it harder to do for him to do business now because of this with his fighters. But anyway, that's another story. We have Bruce Buffer supposed to be coming on with us tonight. I'm going to give him a ring right now, see if he can connect with us, and then if we don't get him, we'll try him at 9. Actually, hold off on that. But the big UFC fight coming to Boston next weekend, that's the main event is going to be, let's see, Randy Couture versus James Toney. So that's going to be another interesting fight. And it's going to maybe start making that whole boxing versus MMA debate swirl and gain some more momentum again, depending on the outcome, of course. But either way, I think it'll generate some controversy.
Well, of course, well, if James Toney's involved, it'll generate some controversy. A lot of times, what kind of shape he comes in. I mean, if he's out of shape, looking bad, and he loses, I mean, he gives boxing a black eye. See, here's one thing I'll say, and I'm going to say it again. James Toney does not have a good style for martial arts. James Toney's a guy that likes to go in the ring, shoulder to shoulder. He likes to lean back, pull away from punches, counter punch. I can see him leaving himself open to too many shoots. If Randy Couture tries to stay on his feet and punch it out, he has his hook with James' openings.
Right.
If Randy just, you know, goes for the legs and goes for a ground game, I don't see James lasting very long. He's a tough guy. He's a very smart fighter. But remember, he's never had to defend against gold arm bars, ankle locks, anything like that, triangles. And that's something like...
Well, you can't say that, though, because what do you think? He's not training? I mean, he's training.
He's not training, but there's a difference, Rich. I mean, it's a difference, like, you know, playing football your whole life, like Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was the greatest basketball player of all time. He tried to step into baseball. Yeah, he practiced. Yeah. But what happened when he got out there against live competition? He was batting 122.
Right.
And he couldn't make it out of Double A. He goes back on the basketball net, and he's sinking like the last shot winning the NBA championship. It's the same thing, you know. I'm sure James has been training, but I'm sure at the same time it's not in a live situation.
But, I mean, you got a big difference there. You got going from one completely different sport. It has nothing to do with the other sport. And this is a guy coming from a sport that is one of the disciplines of this sport. So I think it's a completely different thing. I like your analysis. It's a good point to bring up, but I think it's different because you got two different sports. I mean, look at the size of the balls in the two sports. You know, it's a whole different concept. One, you got to put the ball in a net. The other one, you got to try to get it over the fence with a stick. So I don't know if that applies, but good on you for trying to bring it up. Anyway, we're gonna get Bruce on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's styles. James was a defensive counterpunching style.
Yeah, we'll see. I can't wait.
Hello.
Bruce.
Yep.
Hi, this is Ramble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. We got Tony the Tornado on the line. We're live with the Combat Sports Show.
Oh, hi. You know, I'm actually at a dinner right now.
Oh, geez. Would we be able to connect with you a little later?
Yeah, what time do you guys want to?
We go till 10 o'clock Eastern, which is 8:40 here now.
All right, so now, yeah, you know, I want to enjoy my dinner with my family. So why don't you give me a call, like, in about an hour, if that's okay.
Okay.
Okay?
Sounds good.
All right, so I guess you call me ahead of time, and I'll time it out. I apologize.
That's all right.
Okay, bro. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Well, Rich, if I mean he's calling in an hour, that's only going to give us like 15 minutes.
No, we're going to call him at 9:30. So we get at least, you know, the last half hour of the
show. Yeah, but he said give him at least an hour. That's 9:45.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll say. We'll call him at 9:45. We'll BS with him for like 2 or 3 minutes, and then I think we'll reschedule for next week so we can get, you know, a full 30 to 45 minutes with him. I mean, I got a lot of questions to ask the guy.
All right, well,
I mean, you got to remember, the Buffer family is from Roslyn, PA, which is only about a mile and a half from where I grew up.
Right.
And so, I mean, I got a lot of Philly questions I got to ask.
Maybe we'll end up with Bruce and Michael on the same call.
That would be cool. Let them go back and forth with each other.
Right.
I'll tell you what we're going to
have a voice off.
There we go.
How about we'll see, we'll have Michael introduce... We'll have Michael Buffer introduce you because you're the boxing guy, and then we'll have Bruce introduce me. We'll see who's better.
There you go.
But that gives us more time to talk about boxing.
There's a big fight coming up in Newark this Saturday night too, and it's interesting. It's interesting because it's Tomas Adamak. Who we actually called his fight live on the air versus Steve USS Cunningham, which was a tremendously competitive fight. Adamak got the decision based on the 3 knockdowns that he scored over Cunningham during the course of that fight. But Cunningham hit him with bombs. And Steve Cunningham is not the biggest puncher in the cruiserweight division. You know, he's only got about, 10 knockouts and, 20-some wins. Not known for his, knockout prowess. And he was hitting Adamak flush. Now, Adamak has moved up to heavyweight with very good results. You know, he pretty much annihilated Monty Barrett. He scored a decision win over Jason Estrada. He was a Olympic medalist. He has a tough decision win over Chris Arioli. He boxed very well against him, which impressed a lot of people. That, he really showed his boxing skills, his movement, and, did a good job there. Now, he's got a very interesting test ahead of him. He's fighting Michael Grant. Michael Grant is basically, only lives about maybe 20 minutes from where I live, outside of Philadelphia. Was a highly touted prospect years ago. I mean, the guy's 6'7", he's 250 pounds, looks cut to the bone, looks like a big Evander Holyfield. You know, muscles on muscles. Unbelievable athlete, but he had 2 problems in boxing. One was he lacked a killer instinct. You know, Michael Grant was a very soft-spoken, a very nice gentleman. He wasn't a guy, was going out there to destroy people. And the other one, even probably more of a liability, was his chin. Well, the fact of the matter is the guy had a soft chin. And it was exposed about 10 years ago for the first time. He was fighting Andrew Galato on ESPN, and Galato had him down twice, had him hurt bad. And then Grant came back, and Galato just did one of his famous quit jobs. But that kind of let people know, that, boy, this guy's kind of soft in the chin. But there were some people thinking he could have possibly beaten Lennox Lewis.
Right.
Didn't happen. Lewis demolished him in 2 rounds. So now that Grant, he had another bad loss back in 2003. I was at Atlantic City on the Gotti Ward 3 undercard, and he was just demolished by a Dominic Nguyen, knocked down about 3 times, knocked unconscious. Put up about 7 or 8 straight wins, and now he's fighting Tomas Adamak. Now, here's the thing. This is going to be the biggest guy overall that Adamak has fought. You know, he's taller than... guys like Arriola and guys like Galata. And he's comparable in size. He's not a flabby 250-some pounds. He's a very cut 250 pounds. He's younger
than Galata. You know, he's stronger than a guy like Dominic Quinn. So now here's the question, Monty Barrett. So now here's the question, is can he put all these things together, and can he use his superior size, strength, and physicality to impose on the smaller man? I mean, Adamack is a wonderfully talented fighter, and he's tough. He's got a great chin, as we saw in that Cunningham fight. But that was against a guy who weighed a rock solid 200 pounds. What happens when he's getting hit flush on the button with 5 and 6 consecutive right hands and left hooks by a guy that is a rock solid 250 pounds? A guy maybe he can't move around and outbox like he did at Chris Arreola. Guy's a little bit more athletic on his feet. That's going to be a big test for Thomas Adamack. I mean, he's a younger guy, obviously. He's got the better credentials right now. He's up and coming, of course, in the heavyweight division. But this is going to prove to be a test for him. I mean, he's either really going to wow us or he's going to get wowed.
Right. Yeah, we'll have to see. I don't know. There's another big, I don't think it's a light heavyweight, cruiserweight fight this weekend. In Germany, between Marco Huck, 29-1, 22 knockouts, and Matt Godfrey, who's 20-1 with 10 knockouts. That's for the WBO.
One of Iceman's boys there.
Yeah. So we'll see. That should be interesting. The main event is a heavyweight matchup for the EBU heavyweight title between a couple guys with very comparable records. Both undefeated with 12 wins, and Helenius has 7 knockouts to Tony's 10, Gregory Tony. So that's over in Germany, and if you have a way to get on your computer and get Germany ARD TV or Denmark TV2, you can watch that. Don't know if it's going to be on the U.S. anywhere. We also have a couple blasts from the past here in Mexico fighting this weekend. Marco Antonio Rubio at middleweight fighting Jose Luis Zertouche. And I remember Zertouche's name because he was involved in one of the very first fight cards that I wrote about for 13thround.com. But Rubio is 47-5 with 40 knockouts, 1 draw. Fighting Zertouche, who's 21-6 with 16 knockouts and 3 draws. That's for the interim WBC Fekerbox middleweight title. And it's quite a mismatch on that card, too. That's kind of funny here. We got 15-1, Marcos Reyes at middleweight, fighting Miguel Angel Tejeda, who's 1-4 with 1 draw. And there's a card in Slovakia that I wanted to mention here. It's like complete mismatches. Actually, I'm not even going to it. But there's a guy who's 0-24. That's almost a mismatch of the week. I think we'll find something better. But going down to New Zealand, we also have a pretty interesting card here in New Zealand. Main event heavyweight fight, Chauncey Welliver, 43-5 with 14 knockouts, 5 draws, fighting Harry Funmaker, 15-7 with 6 knockouts. Funmaker, that's a hell of a name. And as you said, Thomas Adamek versus Michael Grant, that one's for the IBF International Heavyweight title and the WBO NABO Heavyweight title. And on the undercard, we have Joel Julio at light middleweight, 35-4 with 31 knockouts, fighting Jamal Davis, 12-6 with 6 knockouts. And we have in Florida on Tuesday, who has fights on Tuesday? I guess Florida. We have quite a card here. We got 3 title fights on this card. Main event is Timur Ibragimov, 28-2 with 1 draw, 15 knockouts, to his credit, fighting Gurcharan Singh, who is 20-0 with 11 knockouts, and that's for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Heavyweight title. And also a 10-rounder welterweight fight between Brad Solomon, 12-0 with 4 knockouts, and Wilfredo Negron, who is 26-14 with 19 knockouts, 1 draw. And that one is for the vacant WBA International Welterweight title and the vacant WBC Latino Welterweight title. Why are these titles all vacant? I don't understand it.
I don't know.
Anyway. Finally, the third fight on this card that's really interesting is... this is funny. This might be the mismatch of the week, although, you know, this guy, a heavyweight, 2-0 is his record. Luis Ortiz, 2-0 with 2 knockouts, fighting Kendrick Relaford, who's 22-13 with 2 draws. And this is for the vacant WBC Fekerbox heavyweight title. So this is the third fight of this guy's career, and he could get a WBC Fekerbox heavyweight title.
You know, when you get the sneaker box titles, I mean, that's big time.
Yeah, sneaker box. What is sneaker box? I don't even know what the hell does that mean.
I don't know. A belt you get in the box to the sneaker box?
But they also have a fight coming to your area, South Philly Arena in Philadelphia, on next Thursday with your boy Hank Lundy coming back.
That quickly?
That's what I said. I just seen it there. I haven't even got any press releases about this yet, but next Thursday it says Hank Lundy is the main event at light welterweight, 8-rounder between him and Elito Julio, who's 40-18, 35 knockouts and 1 draw. That's against Hank Lundy, who's 18-1 with 1 draw and 10 knockouts. So that's definitely the main event. And then the only fight on that card, other than a couple guys who haven't been matched up yet that looks anywhere decent, is Victor Vasquez, 11-4 versus Travis Thompson, who's 3-7. Ugh, that's not a very good match, I don't think.
Yeah, but I've seen Travis Thompson fight. You know, that's actually kind of interesting. He's got better than his record indicates.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. But other than that, that's really it for the upcoming week on boxing. Let's see if we can go through the old USC.
I had an invitation for that show down at the arena, but this is, I mean, I can't go on a Thursday night, not if they're, you know, my work schedule.
The main event of the UFC 118 card is actually not Randy Couture versus James Toney. I might have mentioned that, but it's really not. It's going to be Jamie Edgar. I think it's Jamie Edgar. And let me make sure I have. Edgar versus Penn. There's also going to be a UFC Fan Expo on Friday, August 27th, and Saturday, August 28th at the Heinz Convention Center in coordination with this whole thing. The fight card. But I think it's I'm not sure of his first name, but it's Jamie Edgar, I think, versus BJ Penn as the main event. And I've seen Edgar in his home state of New Jersey at UFC 78. And I forget who he fought, but he won. He did pretty well. And I'm looking forward to seeing him fight Penn. Penn hasn't really had a real knockdown, drag out fight with somebody in a while, so we'll see what happens. Then we have Couture versus Tony, as we talked about. We have Demian Maia fighting Edison Miranda. Or no, Mario Miranda. Edison's the boxer, right?
Yeah, okay. It wouldn't be Edison Miranda. He just got starched a few months ago.
Damian Maya is 12-2 with no knockout, no draws. Miranda is 12-1. Then we have Kenny Florian versus Gray Maynard. And, Kenny is obviously one of those people that's been trying to bring MMA to Boston, to Massachusetts for a long time now. I had a fabulous interview one time with Kenny on my my video camera, but the guy that was taking the pictures for me when I was doing the interviewing forgot to hit record. So,
nice.
Never aired. But Kenny Florian, is 15-4. He's weighs in at 155, fighting Gray Maynard, who is undefeated at 10-0, one no contest. And he's got a couple inches. He's a couple inches shorter than Kenny, so Kenny might have a little bit of reach on him. But this is going to be a very good fight. It's very evenly matched. A couple guys that have been around for a long time. Kenny's changed his game up a little bit since he's had some difficulty. He's improved his boxing so much, tremendously. So, looking forward to it. Nick Diaz, the brother of Nick Diaz, is going to be in action in this one. He's 12-5, fighting Marcus Davis, another guy from around here, Boston area. The Irish hand grenade, his name is. He's 22-7, so Nick Diaz is 12-5. Davis usually fights at 170. But he's going down to 155 for this one, I think, unless Diaz is going up to 170. I'm quite sure there. Doesn't really say here on the UFC site. Then we have another hometown kid, Joe Lozon. We've had him on the show before.
Yeah, it's my friend Mike Floyd.
Yep. And he is fighting a guy who is notorious for his performance or lack thereof on the Ultimate Fighter. And it's surprising to me that they're finally giving him a chance back into the UFC. This is the first I've even heard of this fight, but Gabe Rudiger, nicknamed Godzilla, and I don't think he's any relation to the Rudy from the movie fame.
So can I ask, is he related to Rudy Rudiger?
I don't think so. I think Rudy Rudiger spells his name a little differently. But Joe Lozon is 17-5, and Rudiger does not have a record listed on here, but I know he's had some fights. He's actually done quite well since he left the UFC. He's made some news for himself. He's kind of been able to redeem his name, but I don't think he's going to have any chance versus Joe Lozon. If there's any card, or if there's any fight on this card that I would bet hands down on, I would bet on Joe Lozon in this one. But as we know, anything can happen on any given Saturday. And we have also a guy, another guy from a UFC Ultimate Fighter show, the UFC versus, or the US versus UK show. We got Andre Winner, who's 12-3-1, and he's fighting Nick Lentz, the Carney. He's 23-2, 20 wins, 3 losses, 2 draws. And it looks like this fight's going to be at 155, so that's going to be a good one. And let's see, who else we got? We got Dan Miller versus John Salter at 185. Miller is 11-4, and Salter is 5-1. Both 6'1", both 185 pounds. And we have Nick Oshipchak versus Greg Soto at 170. So Shipchak is 5-2, and Soto is 7-1. And let's see, we don't have a record for this guy, but we have a fight at 170 versus between Amilcar Alves. I wonder if he's related to Thiago Alves. Fighting Mike Pierce, who's 10-3-0. And he's 5'8". I don't even have a picture for this Alves guy. So it's kind of interesting. It's Frankie Edgar. I've been calling him Jamie Edgar. My bad. I just had that name wrong. You know, when I question my facts, it's probably for a reason, right? Frankie the Answer Edgar, who's 5-6, 155, and BJ Penn is 15-6. Or no, he's not 5-6. He's 5'6". He's 12-1, Frankie. BJ is 15-6-1. And they're fighting at 155. BJ's nickname is the Prodigy. Frankie is the Pincer. And like I said, even though it's not the main event, the James Toney versus Randy Couture fight is sort of taken on the ball. And neither of these guys look like their physique is all that great. Although Toney looks like the chubbier guy. Doesn't look like he's as fat as I've seen him in previous boxing matches, so we'll see. It doesn't look like he's in that great of shape either. And that's going to be an interesting one. Couture's record is listed at 18-10. Of course, James doesn't have the mixed martial arts record, but he's got a hell of a boxing record. And they don't even list his weight here, so we won't know that until he steps on the scale.
Yeah, right. It's just an over-under. Okay,
yeah.
Over-under 235.
Yeah, I'd say over.
Say over?
Yeah.
Well, his last two fights, he was coming in right around that. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how hard he's been training here. What he's gonna, try to, come in at. He might try to, get himself in better shape because this is, maybe he's out of his element a little bit. But I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't know what's gonna happen there. It's gonna be an interesting fight. I know that. But the Chael Sonnen fight was probably one of the best fights I've seen in a while, and it really amazed me the way he was able to hang in there for as long as he did and compete and do so well against Anderson Silva. Really completely blew me away as far as his technique and his just relentlessness. Unfortunately, it was a five-round fight, though, so you can only keep that up so long. And a guy like Silva, he's going to get crafty if it goes on the ground. Chael Sonnen was doing best when he was on his feet, fighting, boxing, striking. And he threw some unconventional stuff out there, but one thing he had against Silva is he's got a hell of a chin. Almost as good as Roy Nelson. I think Roy took the worst punches in the whole card and withstood them. Some mean uppercuts, too. I mean, some of the best uppercuts I've ever seen thrown in a UFC fight. But anyway, this whole boxing versus MMA thing is going to be a completely different story. But, all these people that think just because Randy has a lot more experience in MMA, he's going to have the clear advantage. I don't necessarily agree with that because look at a guy like Brock Lesnar, who was just coming over from wrestling, and what he was able to do to Randy. And obviously he's a much bigger guy, much more muscular than Tony. But the weight factor is going to be the same. He's going to outweigh that guy a whole lot. And he's going to be bringing something that he's got a strength in that Randy doesn't have this time, whereas when he fought Lesnar had wrestling skills just like Randy had wrestling skills. So this time it's going to be dirty boxing, what they call the MMA version of boxing versus real boxing. I am definitely amped to be able to get involved somehow to see that. Adamek versus Grant is going to be on Go Fight Live.
Yeah, I don't know if I like a lot of these internet. I guess any way you can see it's good. Certainly different from the day of old network TV on Saturday afternoons.
Live viewing is not allowed in Poland, the United States, United Kingdom, Australia, and Canada. So what happened? You need to watch it after it's over? That's not cool.
Yeah.
Whoa. If James Tony has not been outspoken enough, which means he's just pretty impressive. He told Evander Holyfield to stop beating his wife and come see him.
Well,
man.
Tony did give Holyfield a whooping a few years ago.
Yeah. So now maybe he's trying to bring Evander into the MMA world. Maybe that'll be his next
fight. I don't know. Could it be any less competitive than the boxing match?
Yeah, I think Evander has a whole hell of a lot of issues to deal with finances right now anyway, so. Okay, Evander Holyfield recently had some comments about his former nemesis, James Toney, venturing into MMA. The 11-time world boxing champion is scheduled to fight Randy Couture August 28th. Holyfield previously remarked that Toney was getting in over his head. And these words obviously made Toney feel a certain way, who beat Holyfield in the 2003 bout. Toney spoke on Evander's comments, stating, "He'd been over his head since he fought me. If you talk to Holyfield again, tell him to stop beating his wife. Stop and come see me. By the way, I know he's fighting in Detroit, which is my hometown, in November. Strange things can happen to you when you're in my town." So that's basically like one of those Old West, Wild West, watch yourself comments. You're going to be walking down Main Street in my town, so watch out for the guns on the rooftop. And here's a little video, I guess. Obviously, you can't see the video, but it's a little commercial, and I'm going to turn it up so you can hear it. And apparently, it's James speaking about his transition into MMA and some of his strategies.
Just a few, so something, you know,
Well, that's not a James Stone. We gave this 5 minutes of pain. But that's some interesting stuff. I actually had not heard him say that before, that he is not training anything with boxing. I think that's a lie, because I know that other guys have said that he's choked him out. So I think he's setting people up for the wrong impression. So that, he's also saying a lot of this stuff, like, I ain't gay, so it's not going to the ground. But, you know, he would definitely have he would have to go through some type of training, you know, or else the UFC probably wouldn't even allow him to fight if he was
he's always got to go through some kind of training. I mean, you can't just step into a fight and fight somebody. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. I don't doubt that he could make it a fight that's all on the feet and that's all boxing, but you can't just not prepare for an emergency if it comes to that. So I think he has prepared, but he seems to be, you know, one of those guys that people because of the way he talks, you know, he's got a little bit of that Ebonic flair there, they think he's dumb, you know, but he's very smart, and he's probably putting a lot of this stuff out there to make people think that he's going to get wasted in this, that he's underprepared, and that he's not training. But, you know, when the real fight comes, and Randy goes in there and might think that, you know, that he's telling the truth or that he isn't prepared, that's just going to make him underestimate Couture or Tony. So, I don't know. Could be strategy, could be mind games, but it could also be that he wants to use his strength, so he's telling people that that's how it's going to be. Who knows? Maybe he'll even go out there acting like he wants to box, and then try to get into Randy's game. And, you know, if that guy ever gets on top of Randy, if you think about it, and just gets into that full mount position, that's even more dangerous than standing toe-to-toe with him. Guy's got all his weight on top of you. You can't move, and he's just going to rain punches down on you. So either way it goes, I think, if Tony is able to get the early advantage, then you're going to see it go all his way. It's, you know, I've obviously been wrong before about trying to say that people coming into MMA without much experience can do well. But I think people forget this is a very different story. These are two older guys. Randy is actually older than James. So that's a factor. And also, Randy has 28 fights to his record, and Tony has, even though they're in different sports, obviously, Tony has, what, like almost 100?
His dad has 60 or 70.
Yeah.
Maybe that's for sure.
70 at least, I think. So it's just a whole different world, and it should be the main event. You know, there should be a title on the line, I think, but it's obviously his first fight in the UFC in the sport, so you can't really put a title on the line. But it's still, you know, very interesting. And then also you have that whole factor with I know we talked about this before, but Randy is getting involved with the movies. He's in that movie, The Expendables.
Yeah, I got to go see that, actually.
And that's quite a good career to go out of the UFC and do. So there's no shame in him losing, and he has a fallback career to go on. Whereas Tony, he's not involved in any of that stuff. And he's not making any money unless he does this well. The boxing world doesn't want to put him back on the stage. And he sells this fight better than anybody, I think, the way he keeps mentioning the price, you know. You don't see MMA guys go out and do that a lot. That's one of those things that I think Dana's going to like about him if he does win this fight and he keeps going on and fighting other guys. That he goes out there and he sells the fight really well. He says, you know, you don't believe me? Buy it on pay-per-view, $59.95 or $49.95, whatever it is, I don't know. But, you know, that's hype in the fight. That's good for the sport of the UFC, the, I mean, the, sport of MMA and the UFC organization. But other than that, what else is going on there? Gonna beat that horse to death.
Yeah, but it is a good conversation. I mean, it is funny because look at this one. I'm favoring the MMA guy, you're favoring the boxer.
Yeah, but that's like, you know, you're looking outside in, and you're looking at it like what you would, if it was you in James's shoes, you know, I think. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to put words into your mouth, but it sounds to me like you're looking at it like, if I was going into MMA, I wouldn't have a chance, because I'm all about boxing, that's all I know.
But it's also styles. Certain kind of boxers I think would do very well in MMA are offensive type fighters. A guy like Miguel Cotto, I think he's doing very well. A guy like Tony Pavlik, I think he's doing very well. A guy like Floyd Mayweather, I don't see doing very well. A guy like Kermit Cintron, I do see you guys doing very well. These are guys that are offensive based. Guys that press the fight. Mike Tyson, I think, would have, in his prime, would have done excellent since he was such a search and destroy type guy. He came straight in, his hands were so fast that he hit you four times and he had a bobbing and weaving style. Especially with the 4 ounce gloves. I mean, he can murder guys out there. But other guys I don't think would have been as good. I don't see Muhammad Ali being very good. He was a guy, I mean, if he was bouncing and keeping on the outside and just jabbing and just pot-shotting, yeah, maybe. But later in his career, when he was more like a rope-a-dope kind of guy and, you know, leaning back and letting guys try to tire themselves out and counter-punching him, I don't see him doing as well. A guy like Joe Frazier, I think, would have done very well because of his style. Very offensive, get up in your face, pretty good hands, fast hands, can hit you, you know, before you can react to it. But defensive fighters, I don't see doing very well. I think Roy Jones would have done okay in his prime because he was so fast and he could, you know, get out there, hit the guys, and move. But a defensive fighter like James Haney is a counterpuncher. I don't see doing well. Now, I'm a type of fighter. My style was based on I was an aggressive guy. I came towards you, but I was a counterpuncher. I would make you throw the first punch, and I would try to counter. You watch some of my fights, you'll see where I'm doing subtle moves to make the guy punch or setting up angles so I could, you know, counter off his moves. That's why I don't see myself being as effective. I was never a wrestler, so I had no ground game.
Well, I was a wrestler, and actually most of my varsity career, I ended up having to wrestle guys about at least 10 pounds over my actual weight. So I was around the buck 55, and I was wrestling 171. So, I mean, even with that experience, I went to boxing after that. I only wrestled 3 years in high school. I started late. And the one time that I got to wrestle my own weight was in junior varsity, and I actually won the junior varsity state championships 1 year. At my weight, so it was probably the best thing I ever had happen to me in wrestling. But, you know, I still was able to hold my own at 171 a few times. I won third place in a tournament one time at 171. So it is a style thing, but it's also, you know, what kind of heart you have, what kind of just overall toughness too, to be able to fight a guy that's, you know, that much over your weight, number one, is tough, but then to have to do it two or three times in one day,
that
can get ridiculous, and it did. And I remember the worst thing that I've ever had to deal with was the sectional tournament my senior year, and, you know, the guy that I had beat in a wrestle-off was in the finals against a kid that I had beat during the regular season who bumped up to 171, and he's wrestling the kid at 160. So I had to watch this kid get his ass kicked in the sectionals against the guy, and would have put me into the state tournament varsity if I had the chance to go against the guy again, because it was the same thing that he did to me, that he tried to do to this kid, and he beat this kid. And I ended up going against a kid that I got into a scuffle with on the mat because he punched me in the nuts, and I kneed him in the head. So, And then in another fight, another match that day, I ended up beating the kid, but I got my tooth loose, got knocked loose, and it was just brutal. And I ended up getting fifth place instead of getting the first place berth that I would have got in the finals in front of everybody. And I even gave my buddy on my team advice about going up against this kid, and he took it the wrong way. I told him to shoot for the legs and, take him down. And this kid thought I meant, put the legs in, where when you get somebody on the ground, you wrap your legs around them. But that was his specialty anyway, so who knows, maybe that was just what he was trying to do to get to his specialty. But didn't listen to my advice, and he lost. But even with all my wrestling experience with fighting guys way over my weight in wrestling, I just don't think that mixed martial arts would be my thing because of my style. I'm a defensive guy, when I fight, whether it's a street fight or in boxing, I'm defensive. I wait for a guy to eat. If I don't throw the first punch, if I do throw the first punch, first of all, it's a jab. It's a defensive type of setup punch. If I don't throw the first punch, it's usually because I want that guy to make a mistake first. I want him to be the one that's going to be on the bad end of it when he falls flat on his face because he overcommits, or he throws that punch that I duck under, and surprise him with the counter punch. So I don't think that works well for me in MMA. But I don't know. Someday I might get into just training MMA and, messing around with it, but I would never go professionally with it. And maybe I wouldn't say that if I had actually fought boxing professionally. But even because I haven't fought boxing professionally, I wouldn't be comfortable with going into MMA. And also, I'm not even comfortable trying to go into professional boxing because it's so late in my career. I'd rather just do the amateurs when I get back to full strength with this ankle of mine. But enough about me. Let's get back to MMA and the news. $200 million headlock on mixed martial arts. There's an interesting article here on CNNMoney.com about Tap Out. It's a $200 million company now in annual revenue. So check that out if you go by CNNMoney.com. Now, this is an interesting story from the Associated Press. MMA fighter has been charged in an assault in a fatal Las Vegas hotel scuffle. Prosecutors have filed a broad criminal murder charge against a 25-year-old one-time mixed martial arts fighter in the slaying of a former UNLV football player in a scuffle at a Las Vegas party.
Wow.
A complaint filed Tuesday accuses Jason Sindelar of open murder. Never heard of open murder. What is closed murder? In the June 19th death of 26-year-old DeMario Reynolds Sr. The charge gives the jury several options of trial, including manslaughter. Well, I guess that's what it means by open. A judge gave Sindelar until Friday to post $50,000 bail pending trial. Witnesses say Reynolds intervened in a 4 a.m. altercation between Sindelar and Sindelar's girlfriend in a room at the Luxor Hotel Casino. The Clark County Coroner ruled that Reynolds died of cocaine, ecstasy, and alcohol intoxication, with injuries received in the fight a contributing factor. Wow, so that's going to be a hell of a case to watch, I think, being the legal guy that I am. There's going to be a lot of nuances to that because it's going to be tough. I mean, obviously, the coroner has ruled that the fight is a contributing factor, but, this cocaine, ecstasy, and alcohol, that's...
Well, obviously, it cannot help.
That just adds so many different things that a defense attorney can come in and point to and say, well, number one, cocaine is speed, and it's something that would make the guy that died more violent. And you got ecstasy and alcohol, which aren't even supposed to be mixed. never mind, on top of cocaine. And that obviously clouds the guy's judgment. So it's a lot of different stuff there. But I would assume this guy is going to, I mean, he intervened in a fight between the guy and his girlfriend. So it's not really self-defense, but you could say he was doing a chivalrous deed if the guy was going to beat his girlfriend. So that's a hell of a case. I'd really like to follow that one. I'll probably lose it in the mix, you know, I probably won't hear much about it again, but that is definitely one of those fact is stranger than fiction cases. It should be on Law and Order. They need a Law and Order in Las Vegas. I mean, they got CSI Vegas, I think, right? Yeah, they got CSI.
They need all but different ones.
So.
I don't watch any of them.
I know Law and Order just came out with a Los Angeles Hollywood one. I haven't seen it yet. It hasn't premiered yet, but that's great. That's definitely going to be one I'm going to watch. All right, so I guess that pretty much wipes us out for the big mixed martial arts news that I see here. Should we try Bruce again now?
You know what? Could you say in at least an hour? It's only been about 48-50 minutes. I mean, the other thing I was going to do is like get on the guy's shit.
Right.
We only got 20 minutes. I'd say we look to reschedule personally.
All
right. Because I hate trying to cram an interview in 20 minutes because I got questions I want to ask. We got other things, you know, I want to talk about. I got a couple of questions I'd like to ask him, like when we interviewed Larry Tornandi a couple of years ago. Because I did a little bit of ring announcing. I mean, obviously on a very, very, very small scale. The one question I want to ask is, you know, as being a ring announcer, you're obviously watching these fights. You watch a lot of fights. You get up there and Fighter A has obviously kicked the shit out of Fighter B. You know who's won this fight. You get them cards in your hand, and it's a unanimous decision out of the blue corner. Fighter B, who just got his ass whipped. You know, I think, how do you say it with any marker of enthusiasm? And the reason I'm saying that was I'm going back about 9 years at the time, I was at Shippensburg University. And they had brought me in as the ring announcer. As you know, in college boxing, the ring announcer was not up in the ring. He was seated at the table. And I'm doing the ring announcing, and there's a fighter from Lock Haven fighting a kid from Army. The fighter from Lock Haven was in the red corner. His name was Heath Stout. In fact, his brother is one of the assistant coaches there right now. And he's fighting this kid from Army. And everybody in the world knew he slit this kid's ass. Tony Wolf, veteran referee, was a referee in the match, and Tony was a guy, he was very outspoken if he thought the decision was unjust. And so I'm sitting there, and he whips this kid's ass. The cards get handed to me, and the top one has the blue corner circle for the Army kit. And I literally looked at it, because normally what they do is they would give you the top card, with the corner circle, and that's who the winner would be. And I said, maybe they mixed it up. Maybe it was a split decision for the Lock Haven kid. Maybe some idiot voted for the Army kid. I looked at all three cards, and it was unanimous, the Army guy. And I said, this has got to be fucking kidding me. But I had to announce it. I remember the way we were set up was Tony's in the middle of the ring. He's got the Lock Haven kid in the red corner to his left, and the Army kid was right, and their backs were facing me. And I remember I got on the phone, and I was so subdued when I said it. I was like, "Your winner out of the blue corner." And I remember before he raised his hand, Tony looked back at me like, "You've got to be shitting me." And nodded to him, "Yes, I'm not bullshitting this thing." And then he raised the kid's hand, like, you can see it. He's like, "You've got to be kidding me." But I couldn't get enthusiastic. I remember Larry saying, he's like, I always try to be enthusiastic even if I think it's bullshit because I don't want to steal the guy's moment away from him. It's his moment. I don't want to steal it. I'm like, yeah, but even the guy should know that he got his ass whipped. I mean, the fighter in the ring knows he got his ass whipped.
he might make excuses, but a fighter deep down inside knows they got his ass fucked. But Larry's like, no, it's his mom, can't take it away from him. Okay, Larry, if that's, you know, the way you want to say it, fine. But you know, it's just other something. I just, there was one decision I just remember in the ring after. And I want to ask, you know, Bruce, if these two MMA guys, they go for 3 or 5 rounds, and you know, fighter A is beating fighter B, like, how do you get enthusiastic when you're announcing a decision you obviously know is unjust?
Right.
I actually have a picture. I've got to scan it and send it to you. Let the photo tell you about when I fought your boy Jesse Bond at Penn State, and they ripped me off real bad. Then they knocked him down, and they still even gave him one judge, gave him that round. I have a picture. Right there announcing the decision, and Jesse's like falling to his knees because he went to Dr. Cox and, you know, knew he lost. He's falling to his knees, and you can look in Tony Webb's face, and you can see he was saying, this is bullshit. He came up to me after the fight, and he's like, that was a crock of shit, and he went up to Dr. Cox and said it too, but you know what? It didn't matter, because 2 of the 3 judges went for Jesse Bond. And that was one of my big arguments going into that fight, was I've already lost. If it goes to the decision, I lose on the one card, because the one card was the judge that was so pro-Penn State, he cheered during the matches. And I said, can you not assign him to my match? I said, I don't care who else you put in there. You can put Osama bin Laden himself. I don't care. I don't want this guy, you know, judging my fight. I said, well, next year, listen to this, Rich. I fought a guy the 1 year, and I wanted it was a decision. It was split. And the one judge had me winning every round, voted me for outstanding boxer. Everybody who watches the film says, it wasn't a great fight, but I got it. I won. This guy had me losing every single round. We're like, this guy, like, is he Alzheimer's? Is he, you know, forgetting things up there? Is he that blind? Is his eyesight that bad? And you remember he came up to me and he's like, I hope you knock him out. I hope you knock him out. Good luck to you. I'm like, dude, don't bullshit me. Like, don't give me that load of shit. You know, and then, like, he went up to my dad and said something to my dad, like, I was rooting for him out there. And my dad, but you shouldn't be rooting for a fight. You should be impartial.
Right.
Well, yeah, and he's like, no. And he goes, well, I was, yeah. And I'm like, no. I can hate him. You always did. He's like, you know what? Why don't you get some glasses and go to hell? I told him, yeah. I told the guy, you come and said something. Yeah, he's like, oh, fuck yourself. I mean, I was pretty much done on the pile of something anyway. They couldn't punish me anymore. I was done. You know, I just stopped him in his mouth. It wouldn't affect me none. But that's, they can't want. Oh, God damn it. One thing I wanted to ask, and what I want to ask Bruce, you know, what is it like announcing for a guy you know guy on the ass with? I went up around. I took a good 5 minutes to argue.
Yeah, I don't know if it's, I mean, it's such a thing that's up to interpretation. I mean, well, you know, with boxing, a lot of hometown cooking a lot of times, but in MMA, especially with the UFC where Bruce does his announcing, you have a situation where it's almost always in Vegas. So, you know, there isn't really that hometown cooking factor as much. And, you know, even when there is, it's even more subjective, I think, than boxing is, because you really have only punches to score in boxing. MMA, you know, you might give more weight to a takedown or a submission attempt that might have gotten slipped out of, but he held for a while. So there's just so many different things. Not that you don't get bad decisions in MMA, but...
I'll tell you what I would really have trouble with, you know, judging, would be when two guys are on the ground, when they're grappling. Because you can't, I mean, one guy might be on top of the other guy might be doing work from his back.
Yeah.
You know, certain guys.
The wrestling scoring would be pretty interesting if they were able to actually integrate that into a fight and actually score it. You know, the way they do the wrestling matches where, you know, 1 point for an escape, 2 points for a takedown, then you get back points. You know, obviously you wouldn't have the same type of scenarios. You'd have the takedown and maybe the escape points. But or the reversal. The reversal is 2 points too in wrestling. If you're on the ground and you end up on top of the guy after he takes you down.
I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, honestly. He's the 10-point muscle system in a 3-round bout. I mean, it's kind of easy to say, okay, you win round one, I win round two, whoever wins round three wins the fight, you know, because it's a decision. But, I mean, it's kind of hard because you get a guy, do they use a lot of 10-8? I mean, I'm asking this as a legitimate question. Do they use a lot of 10-8 or 7 round in an MMA type of match, or is it mostly 10-8 or 10-9, I should say?
I don't know. That's a good point. They do know that, you know, when somebody is knocked down or almost knocked out, that usually makes it the 10-8 round or 10-8. I mean, I don't even know if they use 10-7. I would think they do. Some of them do, but I'm not that familiar with it. I've tried to stay out of it, although one time when I was at a local fight, I was sitting right next to a judge, and I saw, like, literally what won the fight. And I said it out loud, you know, whoever gets the next takedown and does something in this last few minutes here is going to win. And the kid that got the takedown won the fight. I mean, I can see this stuff when I'm watching it, and I know who wins and who loses just by based on what I watch. But I have no idea on the actual, how they do the scoring or what they're supposed to look for. What I know that they tend to put more weight on takedowns, just like they do in a regular wrestling match. But as far as all the other stuff, it really is a mystery to me and probably a lot of other people that watch the sport. And you know, especially when a bad decision comes down. Probably the last one that I remember being huge was Nogueira's first fight against what's his name there? Donald Blank, the karate guy from the UFC. He just lost, though. He got the rematch, and he won by knockout, so it kind of wiped that whole controversy away. But he still has that loss on his record against the guy that he clearly beat in a 5-round fight. That was a title fight. So, you know, that's just kind of makes people sour to the sport when they see stuff like that happen. You know, that guy at the time was really, the UFC had every reason to pull some shady stuff like that because his picture and his face was all over the marketing for the UFC at the time. And they were really plugging him like there was no tomorrow. And there was kids getting into karate because of him. And, you know, so it did raise a big stake when people saw that, hey, you know, this guy is their poster child. And he gets beat by a guy who's been around forever and people love, and he's very quiet and soft-spoken, you know, barely speaks a word of English, but when he speaks, you know, he's very appreciative of the fans and the people that show up to the fights. So it was really one of those things where it's like, you know, what are these people doing? They're screwing it up for the good people here, and they're just trying to protect their image. So, you know, obviously it's just a matter of, you know, that there's corruption in every sport. And, you know, the fighting sports, because guys are seen as dumb a lot of times, you know, because they fight and because they don't have a lot of money, they don't get paid a lot of money, especially in MMA, they get taken advantage of. You know, they ended up having to do a rematch of that fight instead of doing an investigation and figuring out, hey, you know, the wrong guy won the fight. And that's one of those things that if you could change either sport, that's one of those things that they should look into, is having some kind of a governing body that can actually take a fight that was scored wrong and reverse it, or make it a no contest, and then do the rematch. Because these guys, I mean, that's everything to them, is their record, especially when somebody's undefeated and they go in and they get a raw deal. You know, in the boxing, the last boxing one that I remember being so huge was Juan Diaz versus Pauly Malignaggi.
Oh, terrible.
Yeah, and that was a home-cooked decision. And there's a guy, Rayco Saunders, who's been in some wars that I interviewed before, whose whole career has been screwed up by bad decisions. And there was even one fight where the guy had like a 3-month medical suspension after the fight, and Rayco lost the fight. When he gave the guy such a beating, he had to have a suspension. Another fight, it might have been even the same fight, he said Evander Holyfield was in the audience, and he told him later on, you know, you whooped that guy's ass, and it ended up being a draw. So it happens everywhere, every level of the sport, in both sports, MMA and boxing. And that's a good point that we probably should have Bruce on a little bit longer to talk about that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of folks who sometimes hate to
Right. Well, we only got 10 minutes here, so I'd like to just kind of clip it off right here. And we discussed a lot. We even had a 10-minute fiasco there where we were off the air for a while. But we covered a lot here tonight. We got all the schedule, upcoming schedule, the old fights. Done pretty well here. Oh, I did forget to mention that Tim Sylvia beat Paul Buontello this past weekend in the war on the mainland. And there's some pictures on our website linked. So check that out if you want to see the rest of the fight pictures and all that. But looks like Tim's back on the comeback trail now. This is the second win in a row. And we'll see what happens. But also, we definitely have to give a shout-out to our sponsors, Discipline.com, DrinkCocaine.com.
Cool.
Drink it, don't snort it. Then we have, obviously, PrimeAthletics.com, big sponsor. They were actually sponsor of the guy that Christian beat to get to UFC fight, to get to the UFC contract there that he ended up. He did well. He'll be back, but didn't pull off his first win, unfortunately. So the only other one, I think, we didn't mention is our boy that has the Zion's Shops, and I'm not going to read the URL out on the air because it's too long, but you know, at the top of our blog now you see the big banner for the Zion's stuff, and that's no affiliation with the Zion's company, except for this guy sells their products through his eBay store, so don't get it twisted, as they say. We don't endorse Zion's, we just endorse him because he's one of those shareholders that got burned, and he helps us out. So that's that, and we're here at the end of the hour anyway, and had a good show, and thanks for stopping by and listening, everybody, and thanks, Tony, for being the gracious co-host that you always are.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right.
I'm always here. I'm always here. I'm always talking shit.
Until next week.
So you might want to call Bruce just not to leave him hanging until you're
I'm going to call him when I hang up with you.
Good stuff. All right, so later, I'm out.
Good night.
All right, I'm out.